Welcome to the Bible Breakdown. It's a black man and woman in America who no longer identify as believers. This show contains adult languages, themes, and isn't meant for children. As black people, we respect the history of the black church in America, but its current state is massively abusive, and we think the Bible might be part of the problem. Listen and let us know what you think. Peace. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Bible Breakdown. I'm your host, Kat.
And I'm TK.
Hi, TK.
Hello.
So
I got a new barber. And
that's what's up. So someone who's not your cousin?
Yeah, it's not my cousin. So I got a new barber, and he's literally like two blocks away. I can literally walk over to the shop. And I noticed when I booked him on the app, his thing was called Ministry at the Chair or Behind the Chair or something like that.
Oh, my God. You know, I see where this is going.
Yeah, you see where this is going.
Man, because, boy, do you ever have a captive audience when you're cutting somebody's hair.
And shout out to, let me preface it with this. Having talked to him, sat in his chair, he's not one of those pushy, hey, I'm gonna try to get you to go to church with me type people like that. He's not like that at all. We did talk about religion. He's very firm on his beliefs. He used to be a school teacher, and he was suspended because he refused to acknowledge people's pronouns.
So he's a hero.
That's a word for it.
If people can't tell by myself, I'm being sarcastic. I knew
you were.
But people who live, you know, not everybody's attuned to that. Like, I'm realizing that now. I have to be conscious. There's all kinds of people, and I don't want people thinking that I admire those type of people, because I don't. I think those people are actually a little too fragile for my taste. It's giving Jordan Peterson. Okay, go ahead. Because that's why he quit his job in the Toronto. I think he was working at Toronto University, and he didn't want to acknowledge people's preferred pronouns.
Well, yeah, my guy, my barber, he quit. He was suspended at first, and then, you know, they were going to let him come back. And he was like, nah, fuck that. And he stands on
He's like, I stand on business.
He definitely said he stands on his beliefs, and he's not going to let anything. And I'll say, you know, that's fine.
Did you ask him what part of the Bible says that you can't acknowledge people's preferred pronouns?
No, I did not.
Okay.
But he made it clear that although he does not like to acknowledge people's pronouns.
Another word for that is being polite.
Well, no, he said he still treats, and this could be subjective, but he said he treats everybody with respect and as human. So he doesn't go out of his way to be like a jerk. He said his sister is gay. She got married to somebody, and like, you know, he's very cool with them and stuff like that. So whatever, I don't know. But
so he's inconsistent.
I mean, yeah, I guess maybe
we all are.
No, not really, because he didn't go to his sister's wedding, according to him. That's what he told me.
Oh,
he said
God.
he doesn't support that, and say he's not going. He didn't go to the wedding.
So he's not treating them like people, because he's like drawing this. I mean, to me, that's not treating everybody like people.
Okay, elaborate.
Well, because I imagine he feels fine going to like a hetero wedding, right?
I would assume so.
So the fact that you boycott the gay ones means you think there's something wrong with it. It's less than, you're not treating them with the same the same way you're treating another group of people. So you're not treating everyone the same.
That's a fair analysis.
It's observably true. The same thing with preferred pronouns. Like, I assume like he used your preferred pronouns when talking to you, because to him he agrees with them. But that's the sticky wicket. Like, anyway, I'm sorry, you haven't even finished the story.
Well, I mean, that was basically it. That was the story. I certainly didn't agree with a lot of the things he said. However, it was another situation where I left feeling like, okay, I don't agree, but this wasn't hostile at all. by any means.
Actually, it was, I mean, it's probably less hostile than most things, but the fact that it even came up at all was kind of weird. Like, even though I don't have a problem with using preferred pronouns or going to any type of wedding as long as everyone's adults, I don't bring it up when I'm working on my clients. Actually, that's something you learn in barber school, is that you're not supposed to talk about politics or religion with your clients. It's very unprofessional.
To be fair, I believe I brought it up. His question was, everybody who sits...
It's still your job as a professional to pivot, because I get people who try to do that stuff with me all the time, too.
Yeah, but not everybody's you. And most people are...
That's true.
Don't follow the rules. So...
That part.
I mean, I personally think we should talk about this shit more.
I do too, but like in the it's as far as professionalism goes, it's not, you know, because you're supposed to be creating a comfortable environment for your guest, and you never know what kind of beliefs they have. Now, of course, as time goes on, you get more comfortable with people, whatever, but I assume this was like your first time.
This was absolutely my first time going to him.
Yeah, that's wild. But people, I mean, I'm not saying like he's like a bad guy or anything. It's like we're all, you know, conditioned for different things or whatever. It's just,
I mean, a lot of the people that I've brought up on the show that I don't think are bad people per se. It's just they have their beliefs and they're unwilling to change those beliefs. And they're unwilling.
And do you think that's and the fact that they're told that's a strength of character and not a weakness? Because I think making up your mind and never changing it doesn't make you stronger. I think it makes people weaker.
Yeah, somebody said that one time. But I think it just depends on the situation. Obviously, in this, I do not agree. I think people should be more flexible. Especially when it doesn't have shit to do with you. Like, if I want to use these words carefully, because it's not if you want to be, but if you are gay or trans or whatever, that literally has nothing to do with me. So if you tell me you want to be referred to as these pronouns, I will try my best to refer to you as the pronouns that you say. I think it's rude to ask me my pronouns, because it's none of your fucking business, but that's just how I feel about it. Just call me name if you're unsure.
Well, I think people do want to know that. Nope. Just for...
Because you're trying to put me in a box. I don't want you to put me in a box. Just call me my name. If we're going to do that, if we're going to play the pronoun game, I want to be removed from it. Just call me my name. That's it.
I'm just talking about like an email correspondence. Sometimes like when people are talking to or about you, they do use pronouns.
Right. But like, so it takes,
I don't think you're
being,
crazy
now you're being
people.
Inflexible. Now you're being inflexible, because in the same breath of saying
I'm
he
saying
said this, you can say Trent said this.
No, like it's not crazy to like for someone to ask you your pronouns. Like that's not an invasion of privacy. Like asking how much you weigh, when you were born.
How is
like
that not?
Those are intrusive.
I disagree, because if I'm telling you, because you're only doing that to know how to categorize me.
No, it's a part of language. Like people don't.
But you, my name is also a part of language. So just use my name.
They're not asking for your sexual identification. They're just asking like and that's the thing. It's personal pronouns. So when people, I don't think it's offensive to ask that, because people do need to use them when talking to or about you.
No, you don't. You can use somebody's name.
Not really. Like, it doesn't come up. It makes language harder if you're not allowed to use pronouns. So you're actually asking.
But then there's an argument that it makes language harder from incorporating new pronouns.
Not really. Like they, them isn't a new pronoun. So if you want people to just use a neutral
pronoun, they, them is not. But zir is.
Yeah, but no one's really asking for that.
No,
and if they
no,
are,
no, no,
fine.
No, don't do that. Because yes, they
but
are.
If they
I've
are,
been in situations where people have had pronouns that I've never even considered.
And that's the thing. It's like, can you, until I get this together, can I use they, them? Because that is switching the mechanics of language this far into life for people. Like it's not even just a preference thing. That is our minds, like neurology is science. Like the way you learn language is science. So that's why when people speak English as a second language, their syntax is different, because at a certain point you can't even learn a lot of these, your brain can't like become fluent in them. So asking people to change the way they speak language isn't reasonable. Like, so if they want to know your preferred pronouns, you can tell them. And the same way that, like, you can make the argument that giving yourself a name puts you in a box. It's like, yeah, like, it does mm-hmm. limit certain things, but it also makes communication possible. So, I think.
Disagree with your take on this, but that's
fine. My whole thing is, like, because even, like I said, like, I can't learn a whole bunch of new pronouns or learn the pronouns for every single person. So, in general, I just try to stick to the gender neutral ones. And I hope, as we move into the future, that is the way things go, so that we don't have, like you said, like, I don't need to know, like, sexually how you identify all the time. Like, that doesn't have to be the primary identifier for everyone. But, like, as we're moving into this new era, like, asking people to completely rearrange how they form language as adults, that it's not,
but
it,
the
not
same
only
way
is it
you're explaining this,
it's not
is exactly
possible.
How people feel when they have to consider saying they, them, or any other of the other pronouns that we're not traditionally done. They, now you
well,
can argue
they,
that
them is traditional
for Black people. Yeah.
They, them.
Cause when Black people don't want you to know who the fuck they talking about, they say they.
That's not just Black people.
In my experience, it's only been Black people. I can't. Yes, it's not just Black people, but in my experience, it's only been Black people.
Okay, well, in my experience, it's been English speakers on the whole. So, like, that's just, that is an acceptable part of the English language, and it's not new. So, to me, it's not outlandish for that to be a possible expectation. Now, new pronouns, different pronouns for everybody, I do understand how that gets complicated. It's not impossible, and especially when it comes to correspondence, it's reasonable. In conversation, that's when you use a different part of your brain for that. And I think we just need to kind of leave room for that. But it does springboard nicely to the Dave Chappelle special that just came out.
I didn't see it.
Where it's decent. He's still, of course, people make it sound like he just goes after trans people. I mean, his brand of comedy is he talks about everybody. And to me, there's nothing that makes him sound particularly vicious towards trans people. But I think there is that sort of disingenuous, like, a bad faith interpretation of what he's saying. And part of it is because he's Black, and the way, and a Black man at that, like, they're just not going to, I think the thing that he finds funny about the situation is he's accused of punching down. And I think in an act before, he had talked about when he had almost gotten into an altercation with a trans woman that he initially clocked as a man. It was, you know, a white person. So Dave Chappelle was like, I'm not going to, like, because if the police show up, they're going to shoot me, not you. You know what I'm saying? So the idea that I have more privilege or that I'm punching down, that's literally funny to him. But for people who don't like him, they're like, well, you, they just see him as famous. And it's like, okay, yeah, in some situations I have more privilege, but as you know, as a Black man, when you go into situations, your whatever credentials you have don't follow you when the police show up.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a whole thing. I think it is kind of sad that people do get a lot of their information about social politics from their church, and church isn't necessarily the best place to get that information. They're not in the business of, like I said, changing when new information becomes available. They think that makes them look weak, even though that is a sign of strength. Being able to admit that you're wrong or could even be wrong. Reread The Color Purple. And that was very enlightening. And it was written back in the 80s, but it was really ahead of its time because it is, I mean, at its core, a lesbian love story.
I don't know. I never read the book, and I've only seen the movie once.
Oh, and it ties into our podcast a little bit, too, because the main character, Celie, the structure of the book is it's her letters to God because her life is so crazy at this point, she's afraid to pray out loud. So she starts writing letters to God. And in the course of it, writes letters to her sister, and her sister's writing her from Africa. And she's like, girl, like, did you know God's not white? It's like this sort of, but they're from rural Georgia in the early 1900s. They have no way of having any context. They don't even completely understand how they got to America. Like, they have to kind of discover all of this stuff in adulthood, things we learn in childhood. And it reframes things. So she eventually stops writing letters to God and just starts writing letters to her sister, even though she doesn't know if she's getting them. It was touching.
Yeah, it sounds depressing. And you asked me earlier.
No, it was redemptive and beautiful.
No, sounds depressing to me. That's my
interpretation. You didn't read it, though. I don't want to give away the ending.
What ending? Is it different than the movie?
Yes.
Okay, well, one thing I'm also, since you asked me, going into 2024, yeah, I'm just not about to be around negative and depressing shit. So
yeah, but that's part of, that is life. Like, she was, I mean, she was living a massively abusive life and was able to get out of it. To me, that's a story of redemption. And she was able to forgive her abuser. Like, in the book, her and Mister, like, end up becoming really good friends later on in life.
That's great. I think that the place that I am as a black man in the United States, I've experienced enough black trauma to where I don't. Like, that was one of the reasons I never actually watched the movie, was because I was incorrectly thought that, oh, this is a slave movie. And then, like, somebody had to be like, no, it's not a slave movie. And then when I finally watched it, I was like, okay, this is good. I can see why people like it. I mean, I knew all of the references because people just quote the shit all the time. But yeah, I'm cool on that. Like, I don't want to see movies about black people in situations like that anymore. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's your choice. I like to see movies about people getting out of them. And I'm also not a fan of reality denial. Like, you can shut this stuff out, but it's still happening.
I'm not denying reality at all. You're exactly right. It is still happening. And I can do what I need to do in the world to go help change that. But I also don't need to participate unwillingly.
But if you do want to change that, doesn't it help to actually understand the problem? Like, I think a lot of times they actually tackle that, because another theme of the book is missionary work. And there's, like, this group of black people that go to Africa to minister to the Africans there. And because they're more ignorant about the history of the Bible than the Africans are, they're actually aiding the colonization of those people's land instead of helping those people. So I think that's why, like, shutting stuff out and not wanting to learn stuff, there's nothing wrong with protecting yourself emotionally. I said, like, well, if you're not, like I said, if you're not going to, you said you don't want to consume anything depressing. But a lot of times, like, learning about the world is depressing. But if you want to change it, you'll be a more effective mover if you have a complex and, like, as full as you can picture of what's going on. And I think I heard a lot of people saying, like, they don't want to watch The Color Purple because it hates black men. And it's like, well, then, you know, like I said, and a lot of times these are people who haven't watched it at all.
I've literally not heard anyone say that.
Oh, I've seen it in print. So, like, I've heard it and seen it in print. Heard
men
people
are
talking
saying
about
this?
It. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Because they're, like, it's saying, like, it's, there are no positive portrayals of black men.
I never got that impression from seeing the original. I mean, it just was a movie, but I guess we can. This is my issue in today's age. I feel like we're just grasping at straws to create arguments about shit that really don't need to be an argument. Like, that is the movie's interpretation. Even if there aren't any positive black men in there, that is one experience that doesn't mean that movie itself doesn't speak for all of black America. It just speaks for a subset of black America. So, like, I don't know, shit like that's like when the Barbie movie came out and everybody got bent out of shape about that shit. And it was just like, I didn't leave that movie thinking this movie hated men. Actually, surprisingly, one of my fucking more conservative friends, I saw him on Friday, and we talked about Barbie, and he brought that up, and I had said what I just said, and he was like, yeah, I didn't leave that movie feeling like I was being attacked as a man either. So
yeah, I think, but once again, you consumed the media. Like, you didn't take someone else's word for it. I think a lot of the people who are saying negative things about either The Color Purple or the Barbie movie or the Dave Chappelle special, I don't think any of them have actually consumed the product. They just consumed negative reviews about it, or and are just running with that because they're like, oh, well, my values are, you know, this, that, and the third. So I'm being told. And it gives you a way of, like, the virtue signaling, because it's like, oh, well, if I say I hate Dave Chappelle, that means I support trans people, even if I keep voting for a bunch of politicians who are actually making life worse for trans people.
And that's triggering for me. I don't yeah. like virtue signaling at all.
I don't either.
I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
You said something else that I was going to comment on. About.
No, go ahead. Now, I will say I did not like, what's his name, Ricky Gervais. He had a special come out, too, on Netflix. And I guess he is actually more anti-trans. Like, he doesn't even accept that it's a thing. Like, to me, that's more transphobic than, like, okay, let me. Because, actually, Dave Chappelle's show was called Dreamer. And he was like, he's like, I'm here because I have very powerful dreams. But he's like, I'm also wise enough to know when I'm not living in my dream, I'm living in someone else's dream. And he's like, I don't think there's any stronger dreamer than a trans woman. Or I think he said a trans man. And it's like, yeah, like, he's like, and just because I don't understand your dream doesn't mean I'm not supportive. I think that's very different than being like, trans, there's just two sexes. It's like, chill out.
You know... This is a slight pivot, still about trans people. I think that the dating apps need to be better about honoring your filters. Because right now on most apps, you either can only select what you're interested in as man or woman. And there is an argument, I think, to be made that a trans woman is like the idea of being attracted to traditionally a woman, you're attracted to the femininity of a woman. And if a trans woman portrays that, then I guess you should be attracted to that. But I don't think I'm rolling with that idea. And so,
okay, if I'm hearing you correctly, you want, like, basically to be able to filter out trans women and just cishet women.
Yes, I would prefer. I would.
But you probably, here's the thing, dating apps are wildly unethical, because that's the other thing too. Because then the thing you can get into is like, stop showing me like black women. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times, like, filtering stuff out, you know, on those preferences can get into a dodgy area ethically. But what you usually
is that
have
hold on,
because
I want to unpack that as well. So if somebody's like, I don't want to date a black woman, I guess as a black woman, you find that offensive?
Not offensive, but like, just the idea is like, don't even show them to me, you know what I mean? And the fact that finding a partner is labor intensive, like, the idea that you're not making this easy enough for me, it's like, it's not a process that should be easy. And a lot of times, if you want it done well, you should have to, a lot of these apps are free. They're just mm-hmm. being paid by your data collection. And so there's not a big push to be as specific as they want to show you. They want to keep you on the app too, for the other thing. Like, a lot of times they're not all that motivated for you to meet someone and then get off the app. So I think
I'm
getting into the
that.
Whole ethics of online dating. Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with online dating, but like most things, if you want it done right, you're probably gonna have to pay for it.
And they do offer a paid tier. I'm just not, yeah. but this is the thing. The pay tier is so unreasonably expensive per month that I'm just like, why the fuck would I do that?
Well, because ultimately you wouldn't be paying for it for very many months.
Fair.
If they're doing a good job. So, and if you think about people who do like matchmaker services, those get into thousands and thousands of dollars. But for people who use them, for them, it's worth it because it is work finding a partner. And a lot of times people who are busy and, you know, people who make a lot of money, they're usually very busy and don't have time for that. So you can make a case for that, I think. But yeah, I think I'm going to start because this is a long chapter. Oh, wait. First, welcome back to the Bible Breakdown. Oh, I already did that, right? Did I?
You said your name. Yeah.
I did? Okay, cool.
But I can't remember if that was before it cut off or not.
Oh, the thing, though. Okay, well, I'll just do it again just in case. Welcome back to the Bible Breakdown. I'm your host, Kat.
And I am TK.
Yeah, we're back to read another slamming edition of the Bible. We're reading the New Revised Standard Version. Last week, there was a rebellion. David had to do some avenging. Once again, we're still never, I wasn't too impressed with David. I'm still not super impressed with David. He's made his bones by just killing a bunch of people. Not super creative. It really doesn't show that he's tapped into the creator of the universe because he's doing everything every other warlord has done since we've been studying these people of in any different religion of any different region. This is the move. You know, stop, drop, shut them down, open up shop. And there he's also still super cool with slavery.
Okay. Well, do we need to do a last time?
That was my last time.
Oh, okay. I kind of lost you there.
Okay.
I mean, you did, but I didn't. I mean, I thought we were going to give more specifics, I guess, is what I was saying. But no, that's cool. All right.
Okay. So 2 Samuel 22, David's Song of Thanksgiving. David spoke to the Lord the words of this song on the day when the Lord delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. He said, "The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my rock, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold and my refuge, my Savior. You saved me from violence. I call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised, and I am saved from my enemies. For the waves of death encompassed me, and the torrents of perdition assailed me. The cords of Sheol entangled me. The snares of death confronted me. In my distress, I called upon the Lord, and to my God I called. From his temple he heard my voice, and my cry came to his ears. Then the earth reeled and rocked. The foundations of the heavens trembled and quaked, because he was so angry. Smoke went from his nostrils, and devouring fire from his mouth. Glowing coals flamed forth from him. He bowed the heavens and came down. His thick darkness was under his feet. He rode on a cherub and flew. He was seen upon the wings of the wind. He made darkness around him a canopy, thick clouds and gathering of water. Out of the brightness before him, coals of fire flamed forth. The Lord thundered from heaven. The Most High uttered his voice. He sent out arrows and scattered them, lighting and rerouting them. He sent out arrows and scattered them, lightning, and routed them. Then the channels of the sea were sealed. The foundations of the world were laid bare at the rebuke of the Lord, at the blast of breath of his nostrils. He reached out from the sky. He took me. He drew me out of mighty waters. He delivered me from my strong enemy, from those who hated me, for they were too mighty for me. They came upon me in the day of my calamity. But the Lord was my stay. He brought me out into a broad place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanliness of my hands, he recompensed me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all his ordinances were before me, and from his statutes I did not turn aside. I was blameless before him and kept myself from guilt. Therefore, the Lord has recompensed me according to my righteousness, according to my cleanliness in his sight. With the loyal, you show yourself loyal. With the blameless, you show yourself blameless. With the pure, you show yourself pure. And with the crooked, you show yourself perverse. You deliver a humble people, but your eyes are upon the haughty to bring them down. Indeed, you are my lamp, O Lord. The Lord lightens my darkness. By you I can crush a troop, and by my God I can leap over a wall. This God, his way is perfect. The promise of the Lord proves true. He is a shield for all of those who take refuge in him. For who is God but the Lord? Who is a rock except our God? The God who has girdled me with strength has opened wide my path. He has made my feet like the feet of deer. He has sent set me secure on the heights. He trains my hand for war so that my armies can bend a bow of bronze. You have given me the shield of your salvation, and your help has made me great. You have made me stride freely, and my feet do not slip. I persuaded my enemies and destroyed them, and I did not turn back until they were consumed. I consumed them. I struck them down so that they did not rise. They fell under my feet, for you girded me with strength for the battle. You made my assailants sink under me. You made my enemies turn their backs to me, for those who hated me, and I destroyed them. They looked, but there was no one to save them. They cried to the Lord, but he did not answer them. I beat them fine like the dust of the earth. I crushed them and stamped them down like the mire of the streets. You delivered me from strife with the peoples. You keep me as the head of the nations. People whom I have not known served me. Foreigners came cringing to me. As soon as they heard me, they obeyed me. Foreigners lost heart and came trembling out of their strongholds. The Lord lives! Blessed be my rock and exalted be my God, the rock of my salvation. The Lord who gave me vengeance and brought down peoples under me, who brought me out of my enemies. You exalted me above my adversaries. You delivered me from the violence. For this I will extol you, O Lord, among the nations, and sing praises to your name. He is a tower of salvation for his king, and shows steadfast love to his anointed, to David and his descendants forever.
All right, that was so enthusiastic. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
This actually brings up something that I meant to bring up last episode, which was, first of all, so just to give a breakdown of this, because it's long, but this is basically David. He made a song of thanksgiving to show his devotion to God, essentially, is what I got from that. And then in there, he explains, like, how God basically has continued to deliver him and look out for him and deliver him from his enemies. So that's essentially what I got from that. I know we've had a long analysis of David and talked about, like, basically just him not being a good guy. And we're both pretty much in agreement with that. But the conversation that I had a few weeks ago was, I asked because we always discuss what are we supposed to use in the Bible, what we're not supposed to use in the Bible. And I asked that question. And the person told me, have you ever heard? So I want to ask you, have you ever heard of hermeneutics?
No.
This is the explanation that was given. So hermeneutics, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, is the theory and methodology of interpretation. And especially the interpretation of biblical texts, wisdom, literature, philosophical texts. And so there's four rules, essentially, of hermeneutics and how we should interpret the Bible. There's the literal, there's the moral, there's the allegorical, and there's the anagogical. I think that's how you pronounce it. Hermeneutics is basically supposedly how we're supposed to interpret the Bible. So when we read a story like this, where it's a song or something, then maybe we're not supposed to take it as literal. Maybe we're supposed to take it more allegorical and so on and so forth. And so, I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up. I found it interesting. I still kind of feel like it's a spin, but I found it very
interesting. The reason why I never really accepted that is that even as an allegory, it's not good. Like, it's not a good lesson. A lot of times, even if you take it as metaphorically, like, for one, he's rewriting a lot of history because he's like, I've never done anything wrong. I've always been steadfast, and that's why God likes me so much. It's like, okay, but you're leaving out that part where you killed that guy so you could sleep with his husband or sleep with his wife. You know, like, you're skipping over a lot of stuff because David, he hasn't been blameless. And it's you know what it really reminded me of? Like a Trump speech. He's like, I'm so amazing. I've never done anything wrong. Everybody's just mean to me. I've gotten out of everything because I'm so amazing and God just loves me best. And he doesn't like those other people. And to me, that's not a good message. When Christianity is doing something that I agree with, like where I'm like, okay, I see the appeal when it's like, we're all God's children. We're supposed to love each other. We're supposed to help each other. I like that, but there's usually not a lot of examples of that in the Bible. That's usually just, I think, the nature, our human nature, that knows that we do better when we cooperate. But then there's also that part of our nature who's like, but I'm so amazing, and surely God can see that, and he'll help me kill these people.
Yeah, I never really operate like that. You know why? Because I learned from a very early age that I'm not that fucking special. And this drives people crazy when I say this. And I want to be clear. I don't think anyone's actually that special. I think we all unique. We have gifts that obviously are different. But like, there's this kind of thinking that people... And I see it particularly, like, going back to dating. I see it particularly in dating. Like, I was having a conversation with somebody last night, and I was like, you know what's interesting to me? It's like, most women that I meet, they have this idea where it's like, I just want it to be you and me. And whereas when you talk to dudes, a lot of men don't give a fuck if you have a boyfriend. They will still fuck you. And I was like, I find that so fascinating. And there's something there that I can't actually put into words, but the point I'm getting to is people seem to have this idea that we just, you're always the exception to the rule. I try not to feel like that. I'm a human, so obviously there are moments where that happens. But I try to, for the most part, keep myself in check because then I think you lend yourself too much to disappointment when you start thinking like,
well, I think that's a very seductive part of the Christian narrative, which is, you know, you're God's special someone, and he wants to get to know you, but he's too shy to tell him himself. You know, like, it's this...
Imagine God being shy.
You know what I mean? Like, cause that's the thing to me. Is like, if God is everything you say he is, he shouldn't need your help to get through to me. Like, I feel like things that are... I don't know, whatever. But like I said, I do want to maybe in this new year talk about like how I understand why people like it. People like the sense of community. People like the certainty. But liking something doesn't make it right.
I agree with that. I also feel like I've been taking that take for probably the last year and a half on why people like this.
It's just hard for me because I just don't. Like, to me, it's just, even though I like community and I like human cooperation, to me, it's a lot easier to do without. And then especially after reading The Color Purple, because I think having read it when I was so young, I think that did have a lot to do with why I kind of got away from at least biblical literalism, and then just getting away from even considering this a moral text that I should live by. Once again, this is just something that was shoved down my ancestors' throat so we'd stop rebelling.
Something, there was a verse, I think verse 2-5, I could be wrong, but the Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverance. You hear that a lot? I've heard that a lot over life.
Oh, we had a whole song about it.
Did you?
And blessed be the rock, and let the God of my salvation be exalted. The Lord. It was like, I will call upon the Lord. Like, actually, there's a lot of the songs I grew up with in church that I think are taken from this passage. Oh, yeah, there it is in 47. Yeah. The Lord lives, and blessed be the rock, and let the God of my salvation be exalted. Yeah.
You know,
but I remember singing it. Even now, singing it feels really good. Like, it's kind of like when you sing Back That Ass Up. It's like, okay, I know this isn't good for me, but this feels amazing right now.
I think I figured it out.
Okay. Finally,
I don't like going to church. I don't like, how can I put this? I'm not a fan of, like, I know you said a big reason you wanted, like, going to church because you like the live performance and music and all that. I don't like
when
that.
When I was little.
I don't like when that I was shit. Little. Like, I actually, even with songs that I like I much rather music be in the background and I'm able to have a conversation or a dinner or whatever amongst friends and loved ones and stuff like that. But
so you're not a concert guy?
Hmm?
You're not a concert guy?
Not really. Like, I'll go. Like, I went to see Usher, you know, a couple of years ago. Or, like, I'm not... And it was fun. It was fun. But one of the things I realized while I was there is, like, oh, my God. Like, this nigga got a lot of songs. Like, wrap this shit up. I'm ready to go. Like, I'm just... And I...
You're not wrong.
I just... And I... And don't... I like Usher. Like, he's obviously sure. super talented, whatever. But... It's to me.
And no rape charges.
But he has herpes allegations of giving people shit.
That's still not rape, though.
Yeah, but it's might be unethical.
Man, listen. It's as much as I hate this, it's true. It's women's job to make men wear condoms.
Okay, so I have a question. Because now you brought, this brings us back full around to the trans stuff. Mm. I had a conversation with my non-binary friend. And you know, so you'll understand this well. A big sentiment that you've probably heard before with men is like, if they found out that they fucked a trans woman, their immediate reaction would be violence to that person. And I also used to feel like that. And then... My friend Nat had said something to me, and I want to get your take on this, where they said, well, you know, it's kind of your responsibility to ask if that person is a cis, or, you know, was born a woman or whatever like that. And I was like, man, I never thought to do that before. And so I'm just curious, you know, with that information, how do you see that?
I think, because I have given this topic some thought, I think, yes, it is on you to know who you're sleeping with. Mm. So that's why having casual or anonymous sex is risky. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, that's part of the turn on. So you're assuming a certain amount of risk. So when that goes poorly, you can't, you know, cry about it because that was part of the thrill. So if you want to have... fully informed consensual sex, which I'm a fan of, you have to get to know people. And so in the course of getting to know people, because you do have to remember that for people who are trans, it's not always safe for them. They don't know if it's safe until after they say it.
That was brought up.
Right. Yep. So they don't know it's safe until after they, you know, get to know someone either. So for me, I don't judge people who don't come straight out with it and say, hey, I'm trans, because it's not safe to do so. But then for people who are like, I was tricked. It's like, well, you can't have known this person for very long. Like, once you get to know people, they usually do start to share more about themselves. And if they are trans, that's usually a somewhat significant part of their life. It's not the only part of their life. But usually, like, if that's something you want to know, and then having, you know, to me, having conversations and getting to know people is part of the, you know, sexual act, not just hopping into bed. So, yeah, that's my answer.
I agree with that. I'm going to give you some pushback in the sense of, firstly, I think we should be able to live in a world where somebody can admit, you know, what they are and not be killed or beat up or anything. I also still think there is some responsibility on the other party as well, because if you know that the person you're going to sleep with is not looking to do that, or you have an idea, then I don't know, maybe cut it off or something. But I do think there's some responsibility on the other party as well. But again, I certainly see why.
Yeah, everyone's responsible. Everyone's responsible to be honest and consensual.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing. Like, so for anybody who is, because if any way that you misrepresent yourself, you're violating consent. So if we think of, that's why consent is such a great ethical and moral standard, which isn't mentioned anywhere in the Bible. But it's something we've had to.
Fuck.
But it's something that's had to evolve over time. Like, this idea of consent, I think it's great. And it doesn't just apply to sex, But the fact that sex does have a very powerful and important role in our lives, and I think that having more conversations about the ethics of sex and dating, I think that benefits us. So, and I think for, if you think about it, women aren't scared of finding out that a man that they've talked to is trans generally, but men are terrified of finding out that a woman that they've talked to is trans. And I think that's rooted in misogyny.
I have a whole piece coming about this in the future.
Okay. But yeah, I think a lot of it is rooted in misogyny. So I think once we get further away of that fear, the better off we all are. And it does make the world safer. But I think because the Maslow hierarchy of needs, I think the trans person has more of a right to protect their life than someone looking for casual sex has the right to know everything about that person.
I'll have to ponder on that more. You saying all of this and us getting into this though does bring up another thing that I wanted to address briefly. I have thought about, I watched a YouTube video the other day where he essentially, the basis of it was stupid people, quote unquote, stupid people are happier and or more successful than smart people. And and his reasoning was because a lot of the time stupid people don't know that they're stupid, or they have this inflated amount of confidence that allows them to go out in the world and essentially be too stupid to fail in a lot of situations. And they're in with that. They're too stupid to know, like, to quit. Whereas a smarter person usually will run all of this analysis in their head and figure out reasons why they should not do something. Kind of how I feel when it comes to a lot of things that we talk about on this podcast, particularly with the Bible stuff. I say stupid in air quotes, but like, clearly there is something about this where people are having quote unquote fun, whereas you and I are not able to relate, and it generally makes us feel outcasted. So this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately.
I always have this little saying sometimes I tell myself, like, just be an unstoppable moron. Because, like, yeah, sometimes there is some power in just being like, I'm just going to keep, like, just powering through. I don't care. Like, blah, you know. And sometimes it does. Yeah, because if you overthink things, do the odds too much, you can talk yourself out of it. But I think ultimately it's best to be informed when you can be.
I agree.
Looks like we're getting to the end of David.
Yes. 2 Samuel 23. The last words of David. Now these are the last words of David, the oracle of David, son of Jesse, the oracle of man whom God exalted, the anointed of the God of Jacob, the favorite of the strong one of Israel. The Spirit of the Lord speaks through me. His word is upon my tongue. The God of Israel has spoken. The Rock of Israel has said to me, one who rules over people justly, ruling in the fear of God, is like the light of morning, like the sun rising on a cloudless morning, gleaming from the rain on the grassy land. Is not my house like this with God? For he has made with me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things and secure. Will he not cause to prosper all my help and my desire? But the godless are all like thorns that are thrown away from, they cannot be picked up with the hand to touch them. One uses an iron bar or the shaft of a spear, and they are entirely consumed in fire on the spot. David's mighty men. These are the names of the warriors whom David had: Josheb, Bash, Hebeth, Tachiamonite. He was chief of the three. He wielded his spear against 800, whom he killed at one time. Next to him among the three warriors was Eleazar, son of Dodo, son of Ahohi. He was with David when they defied the Philistines, whom were gathered there for battle. The Israelites withdrew, but he stood his ground. He struck down the Philistines until his arm grew weary. Though his hand clung to the sword, the Lord brought about a great victory that day. Then the people came back to him, but only to strip the dead. Next to him was Shema, son of Agi, the Herite. The Philistines gathered together at Lehi, where there was a plot of ground full of lentils, and the army fled from the Philistines. But he took his hand in the middle of the plot, defended it, and killed the Philistines, and the Lord brought about a great victory. Towards the beginning of the harvest of 3 of the 30, chiefs went down to join David at the cave of Adullam, while a band of Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim. David was then in the stronghold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then at Bethlehem. David said longingly, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem that is by the gate." Then the three warriors broke through the camp of the Philistines, drew water from the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and brought it to David. But he would not drink of it. He poured it out to the Lord, for he said, "The Lord forbid that I should do this. Can I drink the blood of the men who went at the risk of their lives?" Therefore, he would not drink. The three warriors did these things. Now, Abishai, son of Zariah, the brother of Joab, was chief of the 30. With his spear, he fought against 300 men and killed them, and one named beside the three. He was the most renowned of the 30 and became their commander, but he did not attain to the three. Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, was a valiant warrior from Kabzeel, a doer of great deeds. He struck down two sons of Ariel of Moab. He also went down and killed a lion in a pit on a day when snow had fallen, and he killed an Egyptian, a handsome man. The Egyptian had a spear in his hand, but Benaiah went against him with a staff, snatched the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, and killed him with his own spear. Such were the things Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, did, and won a name beside the three warriors. He was renowned among the 30, but he did not attain to the three, and David put him in charge of his bodyguard. Among the 30 were Ashiel, brother of Joab, Elhanan, son of Dodo of Bethlehem, Shammah of Harod, Elika of Harod, Helez the Paltite, Ira, son of Ikesh of Tekoa, Abizair of Anathoth, Mebunai the Hushathite, Zalman the Ahohite, Mahara of Nephtapal, Helab, son of Bana of Nephtapal, Ittai, son of Ribah of Gibeah of the Benjaminites, Benai of Pirathon, Hidiah of the Torrents of Gash, Abalban the Arborthite, Asmaveth of Baharim, Eliaba of Shalban, the son of Jashan, Jonathan, son of Shema, the Herorite, Ahiam, son of Sharar, the Herorite, Ephephelet, son of Ahashbai of Makkah, Eliam, son of Ahithophel, the Gilonite, Hezro of Carmel, Parai, the Arbite, Igal, son of Nathan of Zabal, Bani, the Gadite, Zelek the Ammonite, Nahara of Beeroth, the armor bearer of Joab, son of Zeruiah, Ira the Ithrite, Garab the Ithrite, Uriah the Hittite, 37 in all. Ooh.
What a sausage fest. Uriah's the guy he killed, right? Or had killed?
I do not recall.
I felt like that was Uriah the Hittite. We can look back later, but I don't really care. It was kind of nice. He kind of had a word for us, the godless. We are like thorns that are thrown away, and to touch them, one uses an iron bar or the shaft of a spear. So that's a nice little threat.
Sure. Hold on.
But back. Yeah, we are like thorns that are thrown away. But I always like to remind people that we are in America and there's freedom of religion. So I don't have to be a religion if I don't want to be.
Wait, say that again.
I'm an American. Mm-hmm. And so we have freedom of religion. So I don't have to be a religion if I don't want to be.
Yeah. I mean, technically you are right.
Thank you.
That is not at all how
life
it
works.
It actually is here. But yeah. Technically you're right. The United States is.
You know what I always compare it to?
What?
It's kind of like in pimping, because I think all the religions are pimping. And like in street pimping, there's a term called a renegade, and that's a hoe with no pimp.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a better term than atheist, because atheist is like so, like that whole brand is tarnished. So I think I'd prefer being called a renegade, because I'm definitely a hoe with no pimp.
Motherfucking renegade. Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time or day,
because I'm a renegade. Yeah. Oh, well, wait, before we do that, did you have anything about the passage that you wanted to say or stuck out to you, other than these are just a bunch of beefy dudes that kill a bunch of people?
No, I tried to go back and see if Zeruiah was killed, but I don't think. It's not pulling it up.
I can tell you they're all dead now.
If they ever existed to begin with.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't have anything. I mean, this was pretty... I thought it was kind of shitty how David had them go get that fucking water. And it was like, oh, no.
Thank you.
That was some P. Diddy
shit. Thank you. That was a bratty ass thing to do. It's like, what? You risked your life? I can't drink this water. It's like, no, that's exactly why you should drink the water, bitch nigga. Like, what are you talking about right now?
That was kind of a jerk move.
Feel like I would, if I had risked my life to get somebody some water and they poured it on the ground, like, I'm pouring it out for the Lord, I would punch you in the face. Like, are you kidding me?
In those
right
times,
now?
I probably would have killed you.
Well, you can't kill the Lord's anointed. You can just kill a bunch of other people instead.
I mean, sure. According to...
Yeah.
I don't know. David keeps getting away with it, so whatever. That was the biggest thing that stuck out to me with this was.
Oh, you know what? I loved how he described himself as the sun rising on a cloudless morning, gleaming on the grassy land. That's not aggrandizing at all. He's like, yes, I'm that kind of leader. I'm the favorite of the strong one.
I'm gonna say that to a woman. You remind me of a. I'm just gonna say that to a woman. You remind me of a sun rising on a whatever the fuck.
Cloudless morning. Damn. Yeah. Get ready for those panties to drop.
Yeah, man. Pimping one.
Sorry, but go ahead. I just want to make sure we covered the thing.
Oh no, that was it. I mean, that was the biggest takeaway was the water thing for me. So
okay, yeah, that I agree. That was wild. Like once again, that's a con that's going in the con column as far as David goes.
Well, David's about to be judged. So,
oh, is he?
Yeah, it's coming up. It's judgment on his
sin. Oh, cool. Oh, okay. Well, but before he was saying he ain't never done nothing wrong.
Well, we're about to find out.
I think the word he used was blameless.
He said that, but that don't mean that others don't feel that way.
But it's in the Bible. How do we know when to use those four little tenets of whatever, whatever? How do you know when it's an allegory and when it's literal?
Well, we have to do more research on hermeneutics.
Is it in different colors?
That would be helpful.
It would, like when Jesus is.
Well, okay, so to ask that question, even though you're doing this sarcastically, when it comes to a literal sense, literal analysis means a biblical text is to be deciphered according to the plain meaning, quote unquote, plain meaning expressed by its linguistic construction and historical context. The intention of the authors is believed to correspond to the literal meaning. Literal hermeneutics is often associated with the verbal inspiration of the Bible. Okay. When it's a moral interpretation, it searches for moral lessons, which can be understood from writings within the Bible. Allegories are often placed in this category. See, this is already confusing, because first of all,
right.
this is like, this is, that's what I said, this is just spin. This is all that is. Because what you find straight up, what you find literal and or moral in one way, I might not interpret it that way. So it's like,
all right. That's why, you know, King Henry and the Pope got into it. They were interpreting the law differently. I also like to bring up the fact that we're pronouncing Jesus's name wrong. Like, that's not how, like, he would have introduced himself. The J sound doesn't exist in ancient Hebrew. Kind of like when we hear people, Spanish people, they're closer to the pronunciation than we are. The Jesus.
Yeah.
But it would have been more like Jesus. Like Yeezy. Like, that's crazy to me that, like, our Lord and Savior, we don't even say his name right. Because we just love him so much. That is very wild. But like I said, like, we don't have a...
a callback to earlier.
that was solid tea. Okay. Okay, and then I want to tell the like African version of the Adam and Eve story after I read Samuel 24.
All right.
Or 2 Samuel 24. David's census of Israel and Judah. Again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he incited David against them, saying, "Go, count the people of Israel and Judah." So the king said to Joab and the commander of the army, okay, apparently we're going back in time, because didn't Joab die?
Yeah, Joab been dead.
Okay, well, once again, like, they couldn't have just moved this story up. I'm sorry, this isn't the time for notes. So the king said to Joab and the commanders of the army who were with him, "Go through all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba. Take a census of the people so that I may know how many there are." But Joab said to the king, "May the Lord your God increase the number of your people 100-fold, while the eyes of my lord the king can still see it. But why does my lord the king want to do this?" But the king's word prevailed against Joab and the commanders of the army. So Joab and the commanders of the army went out from the presence of the king to take a census of the people of Israel. They crossed the Jordan and began with the Aor, and from the city that is in the middle of the valley toward Gad and on to Jazer. Then they came to Gilead and to Kadesh in the land of the Hittites. And they came to Dan, and from Dan they went around to Sidon and came to the fortress of Tyre and to all the cities of the Hittites and Canaanites. And they went out to Negeb of Judah at Beersheba. So when they had gone through all the land, they came back to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. Joab reported to the king the number of those who had been recorded. In Israel there were 800,000 soldiers able to draw the sword, and those of Judah were 500,000. Judgment on David's sin. But afterwards, David was stricken to the heart because he had numbered the people. David said to the Lord, "I have sinned greatly in what I have done. But now, O Lord, I pray you take away the guilt of your servant, for I have done very foolishly." When David rose in the morning, the word of the Lord came to the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, "Go and say to David, thus says the Lord, 3 things I offer you. Choose one of them and I will do it for you." So Gad came to David and told him. He asked him, "Shall 3 years of famine come to you and your land, or you flee 3 months before your foes while they pursue you, or shall there be 3 days of pestilence in your land? Now consider and decide what answer I shall return to the one who sent me." Then David said to Gad, "I am in great distress. Let us fall into the hand of the Lord, for his mercy is great, but let me not fall into human hands." So the Lord sent a pestilence in Israel from that morning until the appointed time, and 70,000 of the people died from Dan to Beersheba. But when the angel stretched out his hand toward Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord relented concerning the evil and said to the angel who was bringing destruction among the people, "It is enough now, say your hand." The angel of the Lord was then by the threshing floor of Arunah the Jebusite. When David saw the angel who was destroying the people, he said to the Lord, "I alone have sinned, and I alone have done wickedly. But these sheep, what have they done? Let your hand, I pray, be against me and against my father's house." David's altar on the threshing floor. That day, Gad came to David and said to him, "Go up and erect an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Arunah the Jebusite." Following Gad's instructions, David went up as the Lord had commanded. When Una looked down. He saw the king and his servants coming toward him, and Arunua went out and prostrated himself before the king with his face on the ground. Arunua said, "Why has my lord the king come to his servant?" David said, "To buy the threshing floor from you in order to build an altar to the Lord so that the plague may be averted from my people." Then Arunua said to David, "Let my lord the king take and offer up what seems good to him. Here are the oxen for burnt offering and the threshing sledges and the yokes of the oxen for the wood. All this, O king, Arunua gives to the king." And Arunua said to the king, "May the Lord your God respond favorably to you." But the king said to Arunua, "But I will buy them from you for a price. I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God that cost me nothing." So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. David built an altar there to the Lord and offered burnt offerings and offerings of well-being. So the Lord answered his supplications for the land, and the plague was averted from Israel.
Whew. Whoa. So yeah, Joab died back in Samuel 20.
That's what I thought. So this is obviously just, you know, non-sequential, I guess.
Which, again, to me, like, I would think in a book like this, you would want to have sequential storytelling, because a non-linear storytelling lends more to, like, oh, you guys are just making this up as you go along.
Yeah, especially because this story was wildly incoherent. So God
was pissed for an unspecified reason.
Okay, so it sounds like the Lord told David to count the people of Israel and Judah, and then the king told Joab to do it, and then later David is upset for doing it and has to, but it's like, you, that's what I'm saying, this is bad storytelling.
Well, no, well, okay, so what has been interpreted is, yes, God said, go do this. David kind of passed it on to Joab. God, I guess, was pissed or felt like, I told you to do this. And so then he plagued the people is what I'm getting from this.
He doesn't take that approach when it comes to killing people. David has lots of help with that.
He killed 70,000 people.
But math is a bridge too far.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, like that. Oh, I also wanted to bring up the description of God earlier in 22, where he was describing God as like having fire for eyes and coming down on a dark cloud and breathing blasts of breath from his nostrils.
A dragon.
Yeah, that sounds scary as hell. Yeah, this is definitely a war god. That this is like Ares from Wonder Woman.
A wartime god.
And then I don't even get the threshing floor thing where he had to go back and forth with this Arauna guy and been like, no, I have to buy it. And he's like, it also kind of sounded a way like he's like, I want to buy your threshing floor. It sounded a little bit like a hostile takeover, like I'm buying,
well, okay,
I'm taking
so
your stuff.
According to Bard, the threshing floor of Arauna, where the plague ends, was supposed to be the future site of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem.
Okay, so it was just kind of some eminent domain stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I gotta say, this isn't particularly inspiring.
Also,
and the fact that, and David brought up a point, he's like, well, I'm the one who sinned, why are you punishing all the people?
Because that's how terrorists do. They need you to get the point. And in order to do that, they have to hurt other people to make you understand that when I tell you to fucking do something, you do it.
And I also think it's wild when, like, the faithful are referred to as sheep. I'm like, you know, that's an insult, right?
I would argue that it's accurate, though. It's quite accurate.
Yeah, like a lot of insults are accurate. It's still an insult.
I mean, it is an insult, but it's very accurate. Like, I feel like people who thoroughly abide by this are sheep.
Okay, so one of the best parts of The Color Purple, the book, is that at the end of the book, Nettie is writing to Celie and gives her the African interpretation of the Adam and Eve story, because the Adam and Eve story is older than the Bible. And so, and they're actually, even in the Bible, there's two versions of it. But the one of the characters in the book is named Adam, like that Celie's son that got stolen from her and is being raised by an adopted family, very lovingly, by the way. And but when they go to this African village, they have to change his name because they recognize the name Adam from their myth. And to them, Adam isn't the first man ever. He's the first white man that they allowed to live, because traditionally, if there were like an albino baby born, they were very superstitious, so they'd kill it. Same thing with twins. They thought that that was a sign of evil. So, and they were very conservative. They didn't like change. So for, you know, the longest time, they wouldn't allow them to live. But finally, they let who they're calling Adam live, but then like pushed him out. And that their word for naked is the same word for white. So that's why they felt like no black man could ever truly be naked, because they can't. They only think white people can be naked. So it put a whole new sort of light on the Adam and Eve story, because the way we've been taught to interpret it, and like we've even brought up, most people haven't even read it for themselves. But like reading it with that sort of perspective is fascinating.
That was very interesting. A lot of things in there I still feel are fucked up for African culture.
Well, it's all fucked up.
And so, yeah, anytime harm comes to children, I'm never on board with that.
Oh, I don't like that either. Yeah, I think that's really messed up. I mean, to me, it's, I mean, it goes to the heart of why racism is dumb, because it's this preoccupation with these physical attributes that don't really have anything to do with what type of human being you are. And so, because another thing that people used to be superstitious about is if a baby were born still in the embryonic sac, and they would say that that was a witch. And it's like, no, these are just different physical, like.
My thing is, who the fuck is making this shit up? This is what frustrates me about shit
like that.
Like
the Bible people.
Who the fuck, like, said, who saw that first and was like, that's what that means? Those people piss me off, because then everybody else just runs with this shit, and it creates this fucking disjointed narrative, and people actually literally live their lives by not just this specific thing, but I go out into the world all the fucking time. I hear people, is the word expostulate, shit, where it's just like, who the fuck made, like, you're making a standard, and you know you don't need, we don't have to buy by that. Like, we literally don't. You're creating a parameter that does not need to exist. And it makes life inconvenient and harder for everybody fucking else. This is very triggering for me.
Apparently. Yeah.
Like, geez, man. Like, I just feel like the base rule should be, hey, don't fucking do harm to other people intentionally. And if you do something unintentionally that harms people, be held accountable for it, repent for it, and become better for it. Like, I just, like, it's so fucking simple, and yet we make it so fucking hard, and I don't understand why.
I understand why. People want to feel special. They want to feel like they have something that no one else has. They're favored. So yeah, I think that's a big old part of it.
You know what? I actually was thinking about this earlier before we got on the podcast. I'm not actually interested in feeling, particularly like if I'm having like a romantic partner, since I brought this point up earlier, I don't necessarily need you to make me feel special. I need to feel safe and feel like I can trust you.
Yeah.
That to me, like, I need you to do what you say you're going to do, or live by the standard you say you have set. and that's it. Like, I don't, everything else is just whatever. But this, I don't know, this just, this conversation continues to infuriate me, because the extremes of that is children getting killed or other people being harmed. And it's just like, it doesn't need to be like that. We literally don't have
it
to
really
do that.
It really doesn't. We really don't. But what if we don't do it and then God sends pestilence? Because that's what was funny too. Like, his priest dude from Gad, or his seer, whatever, was like, okay, so I heard from God and he said, you can pick your punishment. It's either going to be, you got to be on the run for, what was it, 3 years? You could have, we could have famine for 3 years. You could flee for 3 months, or we could have pestilence for 3 days. That was kind of nice of the Lord. That's like an interesting
parenting
technique.
Gives them an option. That's like saying, yeah. I think I learned, I don't know how true this is, but that's like how I heard before, where it's like, how do you want to die? Like, apparently you're never supposed to ask a Native American, like, how do you want to do something?
Because oh, really?
I don't even know where the fuck we were at. I was, I don't know, like seventh grade or something, sixth grade. But we went to some place where it was like Native American people, and we're all sitting around, and this Native American man is telling a story about something. Somebody asked him, like, how something. He was like, well, you never want to say how to a Native American. I know. This is my only line of reference. If there are Native American people who are listening to this, please clear this up. Because I've always just thought, oh, I guess you can't say that to people. Well, to Native Americans, because they automatically assume, like, you're going to kill them.
Oh. Well, I mean, what's that episode of Friends where Ross was trying to flirt with a girl, and you thought he was being clever, but he went up to her and he's like, would you rather die by drowning or being set on fire? And it was like, dude, that's a weird ask. Can I say that? So, yeah. Okay, I didn't even realize this because I was going to do next on the Bible breakdown, but we just finished 2 Samuel.
Said that last episode that we were
going to finish. I'm sorry for not retaining that information. I'm super excited, though. So next week we get to start 1 Kings, and this is one of my favorite Bible stories because it deals with succession issues. I love that kind of stuff. Like, it's very Game of Thrones, succession, all this kind of stuff. So we'll be getting into that, and David's instructions to Solomon, and Solomon's prayer for wisdom. I remember this was a very big story when I was going to school, because we learn about how Solomon was such a better king than David because he had wisdom, where David just had killing people.
I mean, yeah,
he was a jock, and Solomon was more of a studious nerd.
Yeah, that automatically puts him a rank above, I guess.
Yeah, man. Oh, man. Thanks for reading this with me. This is a terrible, terrible tumor.
Oh, yeah. This is not great.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. Your body belongs to you, no matter what any ancient text says. And we get to have freedom. Like, so if you want to be Christian, be Christian. And if you don't want to, you don't have to.
And if you want to be gay, you can be gay. And if you don't, no, I'm joking.
Be as gay as you want to be. Everybody can.
I'm joking.
No, sometimes it does need to be said. We're told so much, at least I was growing up, about how terrible gayness is. And that's what brings about the pestilence and things like the earthquakes. I feel like a lot of televangelists blame 9/11 on people being all gay. Just being all gay in front of God and pissing them off.
This also is another thing that's triggering for me, because when people talk about, like, we need to get back to the old time. Like, in fact, this is funny because I don't think a lot of people know this. We have more exposure to the world. Internet, television, literature, all that type of stuff. We actually it has been statistically proven we are living in the safest time we've ever fucking lived in the history of humanity.
Oh, but, he's preaching.
But people don't know that.
Yeah, because they'll think this is the scariest time.
They think it's scary. But all of this shit has been happening. Like, I had a conversation with somebody the other day where they was saying something about, I was talking to my ex, and she was talking about, like, you know, again, going back to relationship stuff, but talking about, like, she wanted a relationship to be a certain way. And I was like, she was like, you know, like how our grandparents. And I was like, see, people say that shit all the time, but you fail to realize your grandma was getting her ass whooped and she was getting beat on. She was getting beat on and getting cheated on. And, like, people think, oh, I want that love like my grandparents because they're still together. No.
And she couldn't get birth control. Like, and for me, like, my grandmother wasn't allowed to drive. Like, driving was a big part of me leaving both of my husbands. I mean, if I wasn't able to drive, it would have been very difficult to leave my marriages.
Oh, okay. I got you. I thought you were saying both of your husbands had told you you couldn't drive. Okay.
No, both of my husbands tried to take my car for sure. But, yeah, they weren't able to take my ability to drive.
I think it's cool to have some tradition, but I think we should always be trying to progress forward.
And, for sure.
And continue to improve.
And for sure. There's plenty of room for improvement.
Yes, but clearly we have improved as a species because, again,
we've gotten away from slavery here, at least.
We've gotten away from slavery here. We're living in the safest time overall that we've ever had in the world, because in the reality, I mean, yeah, nobody wants to start a fucking war. Like, it's very inconvenient for a lot of people, and I say that, like, in the sense of everything that comes with it. Yes, there are fucking people out there who are trying to start wars. We're clearly in the middle of, what, two wars now? Not directly, but there's Russia and who's Russia going against?
Ukraine.
Yeah, Russia and Ukraine, and then Israel-Palestine. So we're in the middle of at least two wars.
Conflicts.
Do they not count as wars?
Yeah, they do.
Say, what's the difference? Also, what's the, no. Like, what is a world war? Is a world war only when multiple countries are involved?
No, that's just when we're fighting Germany. That's just what we call it when we fight Germany.
So only when Germany is involved is it a world war?
I mean, those were the problems in both world wars. So it's really just Germany. And it's only world wars if you consider Europe the world.
Yeah, but the United States was involved.
Nah, we're an offshoot of, we're a sequel to Europe.
In a lot of ways, Europe is quite better. I'm sorry.
Well, that's because we came up with modern representative democracy, and then they got to do a better version of it.
What do you mean?
Well, because we came up with the U.S. Constitution, which set up a bicameral, government, and then that's pretty much what other countries, they kind of, after they had their revolutions, they kind of followed suit, but then they were able to see where we've made mistakes and then just didn't make those mistakes.
Yeah, I've been watching, for some reason I keep watching a lot of Eurocentric media and just getting a better understanding of how their government works, and in a lot of ways it seems way better.
You know what they do that I think helps a lot? They have publicly funded elections. So that's why their election cycles are shorter and less of a circus, because there's a limited amount that you can spend and it's publicly funded. So they're not able to take, like, dark money from corporations.
Also, something I don't agree with.
I don't think it counts as speech. People try to be like, yeah, oh, it counts as, you know, like, corporations are people. No, they're not.
And maybe this never was a thing. But just, I used to think there was this idea of integrity and respect and, like,
integrity.
Even if we disagree as opponents, you know, on a political platform, like, I don't need to talk. Yeah, I know it's been over, but it's just like, that just seems so low to like, why would I even, if I was running a campaign, why would I even fucking do that? Like, why would I try to attack this person's whatever? It seems exhausting.
And because it's just about owning the libs now. Like, that's so much of politics, but we need to go. It's been great, though.
BibleBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Be curious, not judgmental.